GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. What do Senator Susan Collins, Jay Leno, Jim Mattis, and Chris Wallace all have in common? You'll find out in a moment. But George, Maine's senior senator, Susan Collins is on line 3 to talk with us this morning on GHRT. Do you want to be the first to say good morning to her?
Always happy to talk to Senator Collins. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, George?
Well, I'm doing fine. I'm watching the chaos in Washington, as I always do.
Well, it keeps giving you plenty of fodder for your show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the talk radio and talk television is going nuts here. The allegations of sexual assault thrown at the Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, seems to be taking us down a path here where we get to Monday. The outcome depends on the new hearing, maybe. Whether the hearing takes place, who testifies, is in question right now. From the inside looking out, do you think we'll have a hearing on Monday if the accuser does not show up?
I don't. And I think that would be a real disservice to both Judge Kavanaugh and Professor Ford. The professor, once she made her identity known, said that she wanted to come and testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I welcomed that since her allegations are serious and they deserve to be examined before the committee. So the committee has offered Dr. Ford either a public hearing, which is my preference, so that all of us can evaluate and assess the credibility of both individuals, or a closed hearing, if she would be more comfortable with that, or an interview with a bipartisan team of the committee investigators. So, much to my surprise, it now appears that she's turning down all three options, even though her attorney said earlier this week that she would come testify.
We were fascinated at the call from the professor's attorney for the FBI to investigate. We're not even clear if a claim of sexual assault is within the jurisdiction of the FBI. What did you make of that, Senator?
Well, it seems to me that this reverses the order, the normal order of things. First of all, there have already been 6 FBI background checks of Judge Kavanaugh throughout the various positions that he has held. And when the letter was passed on to the FBI attached it to the background file, but said it would not pursue it. Usually, the FBI does not pursue allegations that involve allegations against a nominee that occurred when the nominee was a minor. But most important, it seems to me that what we should be doing is bringing the two individuals before the committee. It is the Senate's constitutional responsibility to assess the nominees, and then if we need additional help from the FBI, we could ask for it. The committee could ask for it. But it seems to me the best way to proceed is to have the public hearing. And since we know that Dr. Ford had already secured the services of an attorney, and presumably knows what she wants to say, and there's a week between, more than a week between when she made the allegations and the date of the hearing, which was slated for next Monday, I just don't understand why the hearing shouldn't go forth. I will say that I'm saddened to hear that Dr. Ford has been the subject of threats against her and her family. That's just wrong.
Well, there's been too much of that going on. You're familiar with it in your office, and this is horrible what she's going through. I noticed that you did write a letter yesterday, and at least I'm bringing it up from memory, but it made sense to me that on the first round of questioning, if they had the hearing, there would be some outside counsel who would ask the questions back and forth, not members of the Senate. Mainly, that's not their initial job. What was the response to the letter that you sent?
It was quite positive when I discussed it with the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. The Senate Judiciary Committee was going to meet yesterday and last night in order to talk about procedure, but they certainly have not rejected my suggestion. In my judgment, since these are serious allegations, our role should be to try to get to have an in-depth examination by the committee, and the approach that I've outlined where the professor's attorney would question Judge Kavanaugh and Judge Kavanaugh's attorney would question the professor would elicit the most information and provide continuity. If you have the senators going back and forth, it seems to me that's an important part of the hearing, but you won't get as much information as having the opposing counsels question the judge and the professor. So it seems to me that would be the best way to proceed. It's a way that would get us the most information, and that's what we need.
We're talking with Maine Senator Susan Collins on the George Hill Rick Tyler Show. Many found it interesting that Senator Feinstein knew of this in July, or at least her office did, and then somehow Professor Ford's name comes out, the talk with the Post, but holding it until what some see as the 11th hour, and some see as just an attempt by Democrats to stall, to maybe push something beyond the midterm elections. Do you buy into any of those theories?
I'm very troubled and perplexed that Senator Feinstein withheld the letter. I recognize that the letter was an anonymous one, but it seems to me the way that it was handled was unfair to both the judge and the professor, because it casts this cloud of doubt on both of them. When I viewed the letter last week in the Judiciary Committee chambers, and read it, the first thing I noticed was that it was dated July 30th. And it also refers to earlier conversations that happened shortly after the 4th of July. So I was perplexed that the letter had been withheld for so long. When Senator Feinstein referred to the letter, and was when I asked to see it, and I did view and read the letter. Then last Friday, when I had the opportunity for yet another hour conversation with Judge Kavanaugh, I asked him about the allegations in the letter, and he was categorical and emphatic in his denial. Then on Sunday, the accuser's name came out, Professor Ford came public, and then on Monday her lawyer offered to have her testify, and yet it appears now that she's not going to testify. So the timing is certainly very unfortunate and I think unfair.
Well, figures of the U.S. Justice Department statistics say that only 35% of sexual assaults are even ever reported to police. One can understand maybe why she didn't say anything through the years, although I guess at times she told some of her friends and her husband, etc. I guess the bottom line here is, if she does not show, will Chairman Grassley call for a vote, and will this be done next week?
I don't know for certain what Chairman Grassley will do. The effort right now is still to convince Professor Ford to come forward, as she has said that she wants to do. And I think it would be better for her to do so. In the meantime, I think we should be providing her with law enforcement protection And but I think it's not fair to Judge Kavanaugh for her not to come forward and testify. Both of them need to testify under oath next Monday before the Judiciary Committee. And if the professor is more comfortable that that be in a closed session where it would be videotaped and the videotape released later, that would be fine. That's an option that the committee has given her. If she wants an open session now that her name's out there so that everyone can hear what she believes and alleges to have happened, then that's fine as well. But I don't think she can reject, having made all of these serious allegations, I don't think that she can reject all those options, because otherwise there are these very serious allegations hanging over the head of a nominee who has emphatically denied them. And that's just not a good way for us to end. So I think she needs to come forward, and I think we need to provide her with any protection that she may ask for herself and her family. I would note that Judge Kavanaugh also has received some threats, and goodness knows, and I don't mean to equate myself with either of them, but my office has received some pretty ugly voicemails, threats, terrible things said to my staff. And so this has been a very ugly process, and I think that's very unfortunate for everybody involved.
Let us end on a happy note, and we asked our listeners at the start, what do Susan Collins, Jay Leno, Jim Mattis, and Chris Wallace all have in common? And it is, and it happened, was it last weekend, we believe, Senator?
It was indeed, last Friday night.
Yeah, you received the Distinguished Citizen Award. Now, this award is handed out by the Congressional Medal of Honor Society for your work in supporting veterans. Did you share a stage with Jay Leno, Jim Mattis, and Chris Wallace that night?
I did indeed, and I can't tell you what a huge honor this was. These are America's heroes. These are the recipients of our nation's highest military honor, the Medal of Honor. And there were 38 of them present, and their families and guests. There were hundreds of people in the room. And I was so touched and honored to receive this really prestigious award, and to receive it with those other very distinguished Americans meant a great deal to me. My award was presented by the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, and that was just a huge honor. And really, since my father was a World War II veteran who was wounded in the Battle of the Bulge, I think it meant even more to me. I kept wishing that he were still alive so that he could know of it. Maybe he does. Maybe he was looking down on us that night.
Yeah, we can think that.
Well, I'm sure that Jay Leno, Jim Mattis, and Chris Wallace turned around and said, wow, we were on the stage with Senator Collins.
Because she's
also, we're running out of time here, but you had a bill passed in the Senate.
Gag clause bill?
Yeah, the gag clause bill. That helps people pay less for prescription drugs. Hey, I'm all in favor of that.
Boy, I'll tell you, this is a bill that's going to prohibit a practice whereby pharmacists are prohibited legally from telling their customers if there is a less expensive way to purchase their prescription drugs. And even though it's counterintuitive, in some cases, it's cheaper to pay out of pocket than to use your insurance card. Who would guess that using your debit card would be cheaper than using your insurance card? And now pharmacists who came to me because they were so upset about these gag clauses that are in some of their contracts, they will be able to tell their patients what is the least expensive way for you to purchase this prescription drug. And I'm really proud. I got the bill through the Senate on the 98-2 vote.
Wow.
After fighting off an amendment that would have gutted the bill. And I'm hoping that the House will take it up very quickly and we can send it to the president for his signature.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.